The Approaching the Natural Podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. Sid Garza Hillman here. This is the Approaching the Natural Podcast. Welcome to one and all. I am very excited about this episode and more on that in a second. So if you're just joining me, mostly I come here every week and talk about my approach to getting more health and happiness into your life, even in the context of this, what I call nutty nut nut world. And I talk about all things related to health and happiness and also my small steps approach. So that's what makes up most of my episodes. But now and then I bring in interviews when they are relevant to my overall message. And this interview today is no exception at all. But before I get to that, few quick announcements. I'm going to burn through these because I want to get right to the meat of the episode. So real quick, this episode is sponsored first and foremost by you guys, okay? I'm not, don't have any announcements to make from companies other than to thank you guys for supporting this podcast in however you do. On a financial basis, of course, it's the people who donate to this podcast and buy the merchandise on my website. I'm very careful about, you know, the fact that I've never and never will sell anything nutritional related. That's just me. I don't have any judgment for people who do. I know people who do, and I trust them and love them even. I don't want to get into that bad boy for me. Okay, it's just me. But I do sell Approaching the Natural related stuff. And the newest thing that I'm super excited about is my Nutty Nut Nut shirts. And so those are selling really well, and I'm very happy about that. But also you can get Approaching the Natural shirts. There's some mugs and WWID bracelets, and you can get a custom signed chapter of my book. All this by going to Sid. I like how I slip into like this show, like the game show host. All this, go to SidGarzaHillman.com. SidGarzaHillman.com. There you can click to all my social media, or you can just search, and it's all there laid out for you very, very simply. My favorites in order: YouTube, number one. Number two, Strava. Number three, anything else that's not those two things. Okay, good. And moving on, Sid Garza Hillman. Follow me there, though, because I announce stuff, and sometimes I say certain things. Okay? Okay. I'm also a small steps coach, health coach, and you can go to Sid Garza Hillman and find out about me as a certified nutritionist health coach, but really small steps coach. A podcast listener emailed me today and was like, yeah, I went on your site to look for your services, and they're there, but you have to find them. They're under the about drop down. And I did that on purpose. I take very few clients, literally like one or two max at a time. It's very intense in a good light way, but it's time that I want to devote to each client specifically. And so it's not, I just kind of put it there. And if you really want to work with me, get in there and look at it. You'll see I don't hide anything. It's what it is. But I do take clients, and it's what it is. I'm just not, I'm primarily, my brain right now is in the YouTube podcast running the Stanford Inns Wellness Center, and I love working with clients, but I have to minimize the numbers partly because of my life and also because of the time that I devote to each client. You'd have to work with me to know what that's like, but that's how that is. Okay, good. But thanks to everybody else who does iTunes reviews and book reviews and just word of mouth. You guys, you're the reason I come here every week, and I'm not downplaying that. It's just a freaking fact. Okay. I also have a meal plan system thing with no meat athlete Matt Frazier, which I'm very proud about. People are still buying that thing, signing up and having a good time. We do live Q&As every month. We do specific podcasts that are just for those members, Health Made Simple. Very cool stuff. Literally everything you need to know to not think about food as much. That's kind of that would be our tagline. Everything you need to know to not think about food as much. Okay. nomeatathlete.com/meal-plan-system. What else do I have? Not much. I'm not going to go too much into anything else. I am going to Atlanta in 2 weeks, November 12th. I will be speaking at the Atlanta Veg Fest. Come see me. The North Face 50K I'll be running on December 3rd. You can come see me there too. And in Marshall, Texas, I'll be at the Health Fest again. Good lineup of speakers this year. March 31st through April 2nd, I'll be there for all 3 days, or however many days that equals. Okay? I'm posting 2 YouTube videos a week. So go there and subscribe. Please subscribe. Tell people to subscribe. I'm really trying to grow the subscribership of that bad boy. Okay. More on all my usual stuff next week with my integrated exercise, with my, I'll be in week 8 of the Wim Hof program next week with my training, or in this case, not training. Got a little nervousness this morning. I went for an 11 mile run, felt fine, but realized like the race is about a month away and I have done not, I don't think I've run over 12 miles and this is a 50K, 31 miles. So this may bite me in the ass, the figurative ass, or the literal ass. It could bite me in the ass figuratively and literally. And I could literally get bit in my ass. And so I'm not looking forward to that if that happens. I'm hoping that my buddy Bree, one of my running buddies who's running it, is going to be, I told her if she comes up to me, because I'll probably start out slightly faster than she does, maybe, I don't know. But if she comes up to me and I'm crawling, I've instructed her to just give me a swift kick in the butt. So that could be the bite in the ass and just get me going. I got to finish this damn thing. But if I don't, I'll be having a cappuccino when she crosses the finish line. That's fine too. I'm okay with either of those scenarios. I'm okay. Okay. Onwards and upwards. This is the deal. Okay, you guys. Many episodes ago, and you'd think that I would have looked to find out which episode she was on before. I don't know, but I know that it was in the first year, like very early on. It could be, I don't even know. I'm not even going to guess. Joan Stanford. Now, Joan Stanford, just to be honest and forthright, is the co-owner of the Stanford Inn. I work with her. I've worked with her 10 years. Love her. She's a friend of mine. She's also my boss. So I kind of have to be my friend a little bit. I'm like, good, that looks great on you, Joan. I'm always going to say that because she freaking writes my page. She signs my paychecks. At the same time, she's brilliant. She's a registered art therapist. And we had a discussion about creativity many, many moons ago. And since that time, she got a book published. It's called The Art of Play. It's a fantastic book. She is not just a registered art therapist. She's an artist and poet. And by that, we get into this a little bit in the interview. So I want you to really want you to listen to it, because she's not like, you know, a famous artist. She's, why I relate to her is because she's creative in the way that I want everybody to be creative, and the way that I'm creative, not attached to the results or the marketplace, but to the process. That's the genius of what she does and the greatness of her book, frankly. This should come of no surprise to you if you've heard this podcast before, but I think creativity is up there with virtually every other thing that we do as humans to make ourselves healthy and happy. And I go into this a lot, so I'm not going to belabor the point here, but it's on par with food. It's on par with exercise. It's on par with everything. Creativity, it's in my book. I tackled it because it's part and parcel to that, what I think that whole picture of living more naturally is exercising that creative muscle in our brains. And that's what we get into. So I'll just say one last thing. If you want to know sort of Joan's background and how she got to where she is today and the history of the inn and her own life, all good stuff. But go back and listen to the other episode, because I don't revisit any of that stuff here. You can go to SidGarzaHillman.com and listen to starting at episode 1, literally, okay? And I've just said literally 1,000 times figuratively, and it's annoying me to hear me say that word so often. But moving on. This is a great interview. I just don't revisit any of that old stuff because it's been there, done that on that. I wanted to get into the nitty gritty of the process of her work, of her experiences with people in this process, the play shops that she does that really aren't therapy sessions at all, but what materializes sometimes from those things. It's fascinating stuff. This is relevant to every single person in the world who was a human being. That I believe. So please do not cast this episode off because you go, I'm not really into creative stuff. You should be on some level, because it feeds a good life for everybody. And it doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. So it's creativity, but it's also bringing more creativity into all other areas of your life. We tackle all this stuff. It's awesome. So without further ado, and I will jump back in at the very end to say my goodbyes, but at the very, without much further ado, please enjoy this interview with author and art therapist, Joan Stanford. Okay, technically we're rolling.
Okay.
But as it stands, I'm drinking, just started my espresso, so the conversation will be kind of, it'll lull, but then it'll eventually ramp. And then it'll lull again. So we've got the arc of the conversation is already set out in front of us.
Got it.
Yeah, the caffeine will kick in about 15 minutes.
Okay. Until then, we'll talk, slow.
Yes, then my palms will sweat. then it'll come down and then I'll be asleep by the end of the interview.
Okay.
So then you'll know it's
and
over.
And I'll put everyone listening to sleep.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's, that too.
It's,
and
the it's to listen at night.
Yes. So I will have at this point introduced you already because I do the intro afterwards. That way, if the conversation is just horrific, I'll be like, well, here it is, but I wanted a day off, so I'll run it anyway. And then, you know, but then I wait. And so I will have introduced you. So people will already have known that, and many people have already heard the interview with you before, but I don't remember what episode it was, but it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
It's been 3 years that I've been doing this
every week.
So I think it was within the first 10 or 15. It was
really hot. I'm going to open my back door.
Wow. Go for it. No, yeah, it was a sweaty palm set you off, and you're like, that reminds me I'm hot. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. This is the beauty of podcasts. That this is free. It's a free, it's a, well, edit. Who has the time? I mean, honestly. Anyway, so you were on before. And before when we talked about a lot of your background and how, what led you to this kind of thing. You have an interesting backstory, and that is still there. And they can. I want people to go back and listen to that if they want to get that background in terms of what led you to become a registered
therapist. So you'll say something at the beginning?
We're interviewing right now. We're rolling.
Oh.
This is like full
okay,
on. Yeah, we're like full in the interview.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Don't want to repeat what we already talked.
Exactly. That's my point. People can like, if you want to find out about John, they're going to go back. That's what I'm going to tell them.
Okay,
good. So what I want to talk about now is, of course, the big change before since from before till now is that you had another child, which I think is a huge
a baby book.
You did have a you kind of get like getting a birth in it.
It is. It many people compare it to that. Actually,
It was mine was like twins.
Your book, yeah.
Yeah, it was like twins.
Well, then I'm going to say mine was like triplets.
And your book was in the making of years? How long did you end up?
Well,
it was sort of like you were working on a book, and then it was like,
well,
now I'm really working on a book.
Yes, it really morphed because it started out, and I'd say overall probably 4 years, and a half to 4 years. I started it. It was just going to be a little gift to people on the occasion of my 65th birthday. And I thought people had been saying, why don't you put your poems together? And, you know, they were in all over the place, longhand, most of them. And so I decided I would make a little book with some images and some poetry. And you know how you fold over a cover. I would make a nice cover. There'd be a nice little string in the middle. And it was just going to be a simple project. But I did ask a friend who's a poet to help me select some of the poems. And she came and she said, well, the real story is how you came to do this and how it changed your life and how you have inspired others through your play shops and whatnot that do not identify as artists in any which way, and to do this, to play with art materials. So then it went in a really off-the-rails kind of direction. I started thinking, oh, it has to be theoretical. I have to look back at my thesis and bring in theory of expressive art making.
At that point, like, were you thinking still having the poetry in there, but then also more of a textbooky kind of thing?
Well, I wanted to have the piece. Yes, it was still going to have my original intention, but it was going to have this other section, and I was thinking, you know, You've written, so you know it kind of goes, it keeps changing and you go down one path and then another.
Yeah.
And so the way I was visualizing it at that point was, well, I would have the theory, let's say, the narrative, and then interspersed in there, I would have like an image representing some kind of experience or practice, and I would have some poetry.
Yeah.
But it was still kind of really amorphous. It wasn't really solid. But I lost my way really badly. I lost my voice and everything, and I asked another person who had helped at the beginning, had also looked at some poems. She said, just go back to your original intention. Why did you want to write the book? And I said, well, originally it was just going to be to share my work and to honor my work and to hopefully inspire other people. And she said, go back there. So then I just rewrote the beginning. And at that point, I thought it's just going to be a preface. It's just going to say, this is how I came to do this.
Yeah.
And then it's
now the work.
Yeah. And then it started to make, and then it started to have a pattern.
Cool. And when the person suggested to provide the context, you know, the preamble, essentially, to did she say go back to your thesis, or did you just jump on that yourself?
No,
you were just
she,
now I got to get deep.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you're writing, first of all, there's all those voices that say, well, who needs another book? Why waste the paper? Everybody else has said it better. All those inner critic voices come up right away. And so that, of course, the ego pump jumped in at that point and said, well, you'd better make this, you know, weighty enough that people in the field of art therapy and expressive arts will want to read this, yeah, and you want to add something to the practice, not just, it's not just for your friends anymore. It's, yeah, you know, so then I think that's when I lost my way, because really now,
pressure's on.
Right now at this point, I'm just trusting it's going to find the right hands to open it and enter hearts that are, you know, interested in it.
Yeah.
I'm not that vision of like, you know, I know from having heard from people directly that it does resonate with professionals, because it takes them back to why they're doing the work as well.
And that's something that it's funny, interesting that I think that gets lost sometimes in, I always remember, I was a musician years ago.
Yes, yes.
But I found that people who studied music would almost lose their way in that spark. It's like you get too theoretical and too much knowledge about theory and the intricacies, and you lose the creative spark, and you're like too deep at that point.
Or you don't have time to do it for your own pleasure or your own process.
Yeah.
You're doing it, in your case, as a performance. You're exhausted. You're on tour or whatever. Yeah. And you're not the spirit of that started it all. The love of the music starts. It becomes work.
I mean,
they always tell you, if you have a hobby, don't make it a business. Bakers that love to bake and open a bakery.
Yes.
And then they lose the love of baking.
Yeah. And I think that definitely happened to me in Los Angeles with music, is that the industry did eventually kind of take me down. Like, I stopped enjoying it.
Yeah.
The very stuff I love. When I moved up here and you know, got to this little town, and Lisa was like, why don't you, you know, play a show, and maybe you could play at Frankie's. And I was like, okay. And I played a show, and it was like the most fun show I'd had in years. And it was like 10 people there. Like, it was nothing. But I was like, oh, that's what it was.
Yes. And it's
that's what made
for the joy of
truly. We forget that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting perspective about what you were saying, because, you know, you want to write this book, you want to put your work out and talk about the process, very in a personal way.
Right.
But then you've got this added pressure of being a registered art therapist. You're in the field and you're doing things in the field. I mean, you're part of groups and you have these kinds of things. So then it's like, okay, I got to make my mark.
Exactly.
Or at least be respected and not be like, what the hell was that, by other people, right?
That's
an added thing.
Yes.
I didn't have that so much with my book, because I'm a nutritionist, but it was like a philosophy of health book. So essentially it was like, I think there's only two of us, and one of, we both don't shower. So I had no pressure.
It's your brand.
It was like, there was no pressure for a little manifesto. I was like, yeah, if it tanks, who's going to know? You know what I mean? It's not like it was peer reviewed by Harvard, you know? And so, yeah, but this is different in a way, because it is your poetry book and it is your art book essentially. But at the same time, because you talk process.
Right.
You kind of stepped into the field of, like, now other art therapists are going to go, this isn't a poetry book. This is Joan sort of like talking about her practice in a way.
And it's very much, I mean, the whole field is about process. I mean, life is about process. We get so fixated on, you know, the finished product. Even now, like, looking at the book, it's beautiful. But I remember the piles and the messes and the scraps and everything. But we get so fixated on the end product, we forget the steps. And, you know, you're a proponent of the small steps. And it's really, I think that's incredibly important for people to hear over and over.
Oh, yeah.
To just take that first step, take a second step, a little one, maybe slide back, take another step.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all process. And what I also do in the book is offer suggestions for the reader. So, like, if I'm dealing with a particular thing through the process and I come out with a product, the poem or the image, I still want them to know, well, these were the kind of, you know, ingredients in the mix.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, you know, being a parent
and my
child, you know, becoming more independent or more rebellious or,
you
know, different things that happen. And so that's an important piece of it for the practitioners, you know, for people to know, because they'll work with teenagers, they'll work with parents having troubles with their kids.
Yeah.
So I think in that way it is helpful, because there are specific suggestions for exercises.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it to me also is, like, a typical poetry book or even an art book leaves the interpretive responsibility to the reader.
Yeah.
So there's this thing, Chris, because it's your field, you're like, it's a very interesting book. I mean, it really sets. Are there other books like this? I don't know.
You know, honestly, I don't know. And that was a huge conflict for me, if I can interrupt you here for a sec.
Go.
Because that was one of the, you know, many kind of little missteps along the way, is I have been to poetry readings and shows and whatnot, where the performer or the author talks to the audience and does give a context. But I didn't want the context to limit the reader's experience, their own personal experience of it. And sometimes it does do that.
Yeah,
like, if you know this is about death, it's no longer about a beautiful sunset over here. And so I wanted, and so originally I wanted the poems to stand alone, and then I was going to have like an appendix so someone could thumb back. Let's see what Joan was thinking, or I don't quite get this. This isn't too accessible for me. Let's look and see what she's really getting at. And because I really struggled with that, having the my experience. So the poem is first, so they can ignore the process notes if they want to. And that's sort of how I resolved it, because it just felt like it was one piece. And since I was emphasizing process so much, I did want it to be closer than at the back of the book.
Yeah, because it, because the whole idea of the book, I mean, really the primary idea of the book, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't a poetry book.
No.
It's a process book.
Right.
So it would be sort of amiss to not put that stuff in there, because you're trying to spark somebody to try this themselves, essentially. So I like the idea that it's through the vehicles of your actual work, because you know I'm all about living the example. So you're like, I'm not just sitting here going, do this and this, this, and this, but you're like, and here's what it was for me.
Right.
And I mean, do you sort of consider use your own perception of yourself more as an artist in terms of, you know, painting and collaging and everything that you do, or poetry first, or is there neither one comes
first? You know, it's still hard for me to wear either of those hats, to be honest. I mean, I'm like all these other people that say, but I'm not very creative. Now I'm getting much better at saying, yes, I am an artist. Uh-huh. I'm an artist when I'm doing art. I'm a poet when I'm writing poetry. Yeah. But I do it, actually, I should probably qualify that a little bit, because I'm now more interested in taking classes and learning technique.
Oh, you are.
But
in art or poetry?
Well, actually, I've taken writing classes before, or not classes, but where you share your writing and people critique it. A long time ago, I did that. I actually journaled on and off from when I was a kid in high school, but the art making was totally new to me. But now I'm more interested in learning some techniques. Like painting, I've not done a lot of painting, and so I think that can happen. But the book and the pieces in the book were much more just like done spontaneously with minimal materials, mostly collaging, as you mentioned. And it was because I wasn't trained. I'm not trained as an artist. So now to answer your question, I don't know which I would say I'm more of. Right now, I'm going to say I'm an author.
Do you think exactly? But do you think self-identification is one of the hindrances in this whole process?
Yes, I do.
So where does that sit? Like, is the label, because we label, right? And I always remember being a full-time musician, and like people go, but I wasn't, you know, making my living fully, you know, and so therefore I felt like I can't really call myself, but then it was like, why am I having a conversation about what I can call myself or not?
Right.
You know, it's a distraction from the work. So why don't I just keep working? And to me, it's like, you're an artist if you create art. Okay, now let's move on and freaking create art.
Right.
Right. And so,
and that's how I feel.
Yeah. And so it's sort of like, as an author, if it's like, you have to wear a hat, if you go into the world, then you're going to do a talk, which you're going to do next weekend. You're an author in that sense.
Right.
More than you are really an artist when you show up to that talk, right? I mean, really,
exactly.
At that point, you're an artist and you're an art therapist and you are talking process. Is that how people are taking this book, as more of a process book, more than an art book? It seems to me they would, because it's sort of
I hope they are, really.
Yeah.
I was really happy to get a review in the local Mendocino Arts magazine, because that is an art, you know, it's an art center, and the magazine goes to people connected to the art center, as well as people that take the classes. It's definitely a NART art. And I'm doing
what
you call the air.
Yeah. They'll show up fine on podcasts. There's no problem.
Anyway, you know, and sort of, it to me, that sort of elevated. And when I asked Peggy, one of the people at the magazine, if she'd be interested in looking at it, and I gave her a copy, I didn't know what to expect, but I was hoping she'd like it. But she did a wonderful review on it, and she called it, how did she call it? A mixed, what do you call that? A hybrid. It's like a coffee table book. It's like a poetry book.
Yeah,
it's like a
workbook.
Uh-huh. It's all of these things.
Yeah.
And the way when I to get back to the labeling thing, I don't like labels anywhere, because as I say, I think it's all a process.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a mother when I'm mothering. I'm a wife when I'm wifing, whatever that means. Not that.
That's a whole other podcast.
That's another thing. But you know, so I find labels kind of separate us.
If I
go to a talk and say, well, I'm an artist, to me, the other part of me sitting in the audience is not going to relate as well, because I may not identify myself as an artist.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd just rather be a person up here talking about, you know, how I found something that was incredibly enlivening to me and gave me insights I don't think I would have reached just through writing. And so I'm just trying to share that.
Yeah. So for my listeners who, because I don't even know if I asked you this point blank when you were on here last time, but and I've been wanting to have you on, really independent of the book. I mean, it's a great vehicle, but there was so much more conversation for me to have with you. Because I think since we talked last time, like, I help people build steps lists, and this is kind of a part of my practice. I don't know if you know about it, but in my own process, I brought back guitar by doing a step on my list, which was play guitar once a week. And I set up my guitar so it's ready to go. It's by my laptop when I do my podcast every Monday, because that's what I'm doing. My guitar is there. And I go, oh, that's right, my guitar. So I put my hands on my guitar every week. So it was this thing for me of like, that's the missing piece. I want that back. And I was journaling already, and I do my deep breathing and that kind of thing. And of course my eating's dialed in and fitness all dialed in, but there was a missing piece.
Right.
And so I realized that was that. And I don't know if that's because my background is with so much creativity or if it's applicable, this is my feeling, to every human being. And so we'll get into that in a second. But I guess the question for me is why I wanted to bring you back here was to talk about the place that art plays. But for my listeners who may have not gotten it in the first interview, is define art therapy. First, define it, if you wouldn't mind, in terms of what the industry would define it. And then if there's a difference between that and sort of how you approach that, then what's the difference? Then how do you approach that, and how's that different from sort of the standard? This is what art therapy does, but sort of it's my take on it. Mm-hmm. You know, do that if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Well, the field of art therapy is relatively new. I think it started in the 50s, 1950s. It became like a real profession. But they've always known that people that struggle, marginalized people like in insane asylums, did things with art that was incredible. And several people would write about that. It was in journals and whatnot. And some people started working, having art studios in these different institutions. And so the roots of art therapy really are that it's a nonverbal way of communicating. And it's actually, all of us have that. I mean, we start out that way as children without words. And so it goes deep into our psyches and into our, it's actually a body thing. And our feelings and emotions are stored in our bodies and in images. And so when you access imagery around any issue, really, it's very healing. But the other thing is it bypasses the sensor in the brain, let's say. And so when you're, the way the field of art, I mean, it's used in many different areas. It's used with many different populations, in prisons, in schools, with anybody that has any issue, really. And I know it's a very powerful method because I've seen it. I've seen how it releases things. I see how it reveals things. And as an art therapist, you are, the way I was trained in particular, is you're a co-artist in the process, if you like. You're not saying, oh, I see you've used black on the face of your mother. Why is that there? You know, it's like, you know, well, I suppose you could say that, but usually you wait for the person to notice things because it's just accessing consciousness.
Yeah. You don't want to make them self-conscious.
You don't want to do the work for them. Their work is becoming more conscious. So they might, you can ask leading questions, but you have to be very careful you're not leading them.
Yes, you're
getting information that helps you understand. So you really pay attention to what's on the page. You don't bring in your own theoretical take on it.
And that's essentially where that's the blend of conventional therapy.
Yes,
really,
totally.
Right. So it's through the creative process.
Yeah, there's
medium.
A third player
yeah,
in it.
Yeah,
so there's the therapist, there's the client, and then there's the artwork.
Art. Yeah, yeah, totally.
And the relationship, that triad thing, that allows much a different relationship than the one-on-one with the client because you're
it's
relating.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so cool.
And it's mediating.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know if I've given it. If you go to the American Association of Art Therapists, ADA, there's wonderful, more articulate definitions of the field.
No, I think that's a great definition.
But the way I've always used it, I think I've always used it, even when I was working at the schools, was it's just another tool. And it's kind of a playful thing to me. It feels playful to work with art materials because, you know, crayons, we did that when we were little and we cut out things and people gave us things to color in. And so there's something that goes back to the child in us, I think, when we're exposed to art materials. And I like using the concept of play because to me, it's kind of, it takes the heaviness and the seriousness away. It's like, oh, this doesn't really matter. I just want you to put something down here. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And so people that would be reluctant to do it might do it and do it in my experience. I don't know. How else am I different from convention? I don't
know. I think one thing I would say, just because I work here, is that you're not doing here at the Inn anyway. You're not doing art therapy sessions.
And I never claim that title. I don't call it therapy.
It's
always therapeutic, just like playing your guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's incredibly therapeutic.
That's an incidental.
Yeah, it's an incidental.
Yeah,
it's a byproduct.
It may or may not be.
But it's not the goal.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I like. I think that is maybe where you bring it even less if somebody walks in the door and says, I'm going to see an art therapist, there's a certain expectation there. That is that they're going to be healed or have some sort of thing. I think you even take that weight off their shoulders take it back even one to say, if that happens, maybe, maybe not. But that's not really why we're here. We're here to sort of get into things and have fun.
Right. And the title, the subtitle of the book, Ignite Your Imagination. That's really what I'm about. It's like just, you know, if we just walk, I mean, obviously we live in a beautiful place and we can go outside and walk and there's smell jasmine and see, you know, the ginkgo leaves on the path or something that'll catch our eye. But if everybody just went for a walk and was more open-eyed and receptive to what's around them, that immediately starts your imagination going. You know, you'll remember another place that you were at, or the smell will take you somewhere, or just sounds, you know.
Right.
It's like opening up your senses. And so to me, that's really how I use the art therapy. It's about just reclaiming, like you did with your guitar, reclaiming that desire to play, to have some joy in your life that isn't, you know, task-oriented and goal-oriented. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's like I don't have to make a beautiful calendar to share with all my friends at Christmas, but maybe I'll take some photographs and Photoshop them and do this and do that. And maybe I'll add some words and make a collage.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly you have a catalog, a calendar for giving gifts. But it's not the end thing. It's the process.
Well, and in your play shops, it's not even like, I think when somebody engages in the artistic process with the idea of other people seeing it, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so I think that's, then it's like, again, with the expectations.
Thank
and I think
you.
That's what shuts us down as, I think we're all artists, frankly.
We are.
I think I've said thousand times, like, we're creative. Incredibly creative species. Why do you think that gets shut off? I mean, I think we talked about it before, you know, when kids do that whole thing.
And we do it to ourselves.
Yeah, I know. Constantly. So it's like, so I know that, like, you know, we have jobs and families and those things build up. But somehow we make time, many of us, when we want to be healthier, let's say, to change our diets.
Or go for a run.
Or that's what I was saying. Or go for a run. Or we build in meditation. Or we, you know, whatever. But art is always the last thing what I see. It's always the thing that I would say almost 100% of my clients were not, like, didn't engage actively in something artistic. Almost 100, like over 90%.
Not even writing?
No. I mean, like, I would usually, with most of my clients, I'm introducing journaling back into their lives. One of them had, she was a painter before, but the easel was set up in a room, but it was like that whole thing of like, oh, if I'm going to paint, then it's going to be an hour, and blah, 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 I don't have the time, you know, so we had worked through sort of like, get up, put the brush in your hand, and one brush stroke, and then you're on your way for that day. Like, just get your hand, that's why I'm with guitar.
Exactly.
Like, right, but why is it, what is it, do you think it's a societal thing, in the United States anyway, of like, devaluing art? Like, where does art stand in art culture?
I talk about in the book actually a lot, but I think it got hijacked, you know, it got hijacked by the marketplace. People that did art, it's very hard to make a living as an artist, and so a lot of people abandon it along the way, even if they are very creative artistically. And I think people just, you know, it may have been something they did early in school, but it wasn't valued. That's a good way of putting it. It wasn't valued as like, you need to take art classes to graduate and get into a good college. It was never,
it was not
stressed that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was never stressed as as something that could add, you know, health to your life, like how you're approaching living healthily. It wasn't the byproduct of joy and fun and all the rest of it was never, I don't think, integrated when people were taught art.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, learn how to do perspective or something. And so I don't know exactly why it's so, but this culture in particular, I would say, it's like it's left to the professionals. It's something that people just don't think they can do or have a right to do.
Or they're not going to be good enough at.
Right. And the good enough thing, I mean, but that comes into other areas too.
Totally. But we read like, you know, about neuroplasticity, the brain can, you know, grow much and regenerate and all these amazing things way longer than we thought. You know, you can't grow any more brain cells, but you can, they're finding out. So the solution to that is, of course, crossword puzzles and Sudoku. And I'm still going, okay, those may be fine, but like creativity would be the perfect avenue
to bring your brain.
I know, I'm kind of happy to see that back.
And I think coloring books are reminding people. I mean, that's a huge phenomenon. Nobody saw that coming.
I know.
And you know, they're now all specialized. There's, you know, there's different, everybody, if it's a garden type thing, there's a gardening coloring book.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
if it's
this.
Anyway, but I do think that's tapping into this need in everybody to have that. And I read some article about it, and it said it was hearkening back to the 50s when paint by numbers were really popular. But the challenge is really facing the blank page, which is taken out of the coloring book.
So that's my next question to you. Like, do you see the value in coloring books?
Well, I see the value in that it's relaxing and that it's meditative and it brings you more into the present when you're doing something like that. I mean, I've gotten addicted to solitaire, and I wish I never had learned it because it takes so much of your time.
Yeah.
If I was... I wanted to say one thing, though, about like how you can bring it back in.
Uh-huh.
I think what you did with your guitar is perfect, because I have this wonderful studio space that I see things. I've made a point to just come in here every day, even if I don't do anything.
Yeah,
I come in here and I sit here, and that keeps me connected. I think you need to create the connection again and then almost have it like your guitar being kind of like a... you know, like a little conscience tap thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm here. When are you going to come back and play with me? And that's what the studio is for me. It's like, I'm here. When are you going to come back and play with me? Or when are you going to come back and just, you know, kind of shift gears and be in a different mental space? To get back to your question, I don't know why it's so hard for people, but I can tell you that I've had people come in and do these play shops. And of course, I frame it so it, as you said, it's not therapeutic. It's just something they're going to add to their experience of being on vacation.
Yeah.
But they can be very high achieving people in the world, tech people, whatever. And they just have so much fun when they get in here. And then they say, well, we're going to create a little art corner in our house.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking of one couple in particular that came back another time. And I said, so how's that going? Oh, well, it's there, but we're not spending much time there. But at least the intention was there, like your guitar. And so maybe, you know, they can ease back into it. But life takes over. And I think what you're doing with your small steps and what I'm doing with this book, hopefully, is reminding people that the days of our lives, the moments of the lives, the choices we make and how we live through our days affect our health in every which way. And adding joy back or play back, something, if we can just remind people that they need that, it's like air.
Well, I think I literally think it's as essential as any other part of health.
I do too.
But it's so much the like, oh yeah, you know, real quick back to it before I get onto that, like just as an anecdote about my guitar thing, excuse me, is that it's been working, you know, it's about a year and a half, and it's never like the steps are always, you know, eventually maybe you grow when you're ready to bring in more, but it's kind of been where it's at, and it's okay. It's fine.
Okay.
I thought maybe, and I am writing. So now when I pick up my guitar, usually I have a tape recorder there, and I actually have come up with a bunch of ideas. My plan eventually will be to revisit those and maybe make that in. I don't know. I just don't want pressure around it. Right. That's what it was before for me, and I don't want pressure around it now, but we had people over a few months ago, and the kids wanted to watch a movie in the studio. So the studio where I have my guitar is where I do my podcast too. It's a little kind of out cottage thing. I'm very, very wealthy, so I have a whole like compound that
outbuildings all over.
You've seen my cars,
the ranch with the horse.
Exactly. And so in the little out thing there, but I put my guitar in the case and moved it out because the kids were going to be in there, and that was enough to just no guitar for like weeks. And I would go into my, to do my podcast, which that's dialed in, that behavior is dialed in, right? 163 episodes or whatever. But I'd walk in that door and go, oh crap, I got to get my guitar from downstairs. I do the podcast, go in, next thing you know, like you said, life takes over and I forget. And finally, there was one day, I was thinking I was shooting a video, which gets me thinking about my own life, you know, and I was like, okay, I'm getting the freaking guitar, you know? And it was like that, until then. And we're talking about a 5 minute, a week step. And it's that much of a hindrance,
yeah,
of just, if I don't have that thing visible, it ain't happening. Even if I think I've got to go get it, it's the 2 minute. I'm not kidding. If it, 2 minutes to go downstairs in my music studio. I actually have a music studio, but that's downstairs. So it's too far away. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I'd go down there and just to get it up there. I'm not there yet. And so it is a struggle, but that, I mean, like you said, I think it's for everything. But the question I have is, why is art, and maybe it's because there's just not enough books like yours, but it's, why is it like, okay, yes, if you want to be healthy, it's diet and it's exercise, and maybe it's meditation and yoga, which is kind of exercise. But art's never in that conversation.
Well, actually, I mean, it depends on your circle, because it is in a lot of circles I'm in. It
just
is
not
in
mine.
Yeah.
Just not like that. You don't go to Veg Fest and go like, there's an art class. You know, like it's never part of that deal. It's always like food,
okay,
exercise,
well,
food, exercise, and then exercise, and then food, and then food, and then exercise, and then protein, and then exercise.
Well, then we need to change that.
I think we do.
I do think so, because we've talked about this. Like, I think a lot of the problems with our habits, all habits, is our unconscious drives that we have that impediments that, like the guitar story again, it's like we want to do something, but somehow we don't make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's on our to-do list.
Yeah,
and so, it's like, you know, I really want to do that. Well, why aren't you doing it then? You know, it's like, I really don't want to be doing this. Well, then why are you still doing it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's always some kind of payback. I think there's a term for that in psychology, but there's always a positive to what we think is a negative.
Uh-huh.
It's keeping us from doing something else, like being super busy all the time. Well, I don't have time for art because I'm always busy, you know, but I want to do art, but I'm always busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you get into these loops that never allow you to step out of it. If you do art, that becomes more apparent to you. Like you'll see it. I mean, I've done ones with workshops around the theme of balance, or a play shop, or what they want to work with is balance, because their life doesn't feel very balanced.
Uh-huh.
And that comes up very often, that if they just, well, I would tell them the small step approach. I would say, don't commit a half hour.
Yeah,
you know, commit that's, 5 minutes.
That's a lot.
That's
a half hour
is a lot
for most people. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah. So just commit 5 minutes or 2 minutes, you know, just set your clock and just do it. And I mean, quite a while ago, The Artist Way came out. It was a huge.
Yeah, I followed it.
Yep. And that was, I think, 10 minutes, morning pages, right?
It was three pages.
It was three pages.
Boom,
okay. Well, some of the others,
paper,
I think, said 10 minutes. Uh-huh. Some other things I was involved in. But yeah, three pages.
Yeah.
And I think the reason is because it takes a little time to go from the surface stuff going on here, and art goes there faster than writing, in my estimation. So I think I've lost my train of thought here, but it should definitely be part of healthy living.
Yeah, like
reclaiming some kind of creative something creative. And you know, there's a lot of hobbies people have.
Yeah,
and I'm not maligning hobbies at all, but again, they're more, you know, end product. It's not about the process, although they might enjoy the process immensely, the knitting or the whatever doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing beautiful things, and it is creative. I'm not saying it isn't. But there's a whole other thing when you do something that's not, what's the word? It's not a pattern, if you like. There isn't a pattern already.
It's free form.
It's
more free form.
It's free form. It's random. It's spontaneous. And mistakes happen. That's the other great thing about doing this is mistakes happen all the time. And mistakes happen in life. And how do you deal with mistakes? And how do you confront mistakes? And how do you, what's your response to them? Well, when they happen all the time in art, they're usually like amazing. Like, oh my goodness,
Accident.
Yeah, happy accidents. Yeah, 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 yeah. And they happen all the time in art.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, art is just simply a mirror for living. I mean, doing art is like life.
Yeah.
We're trying one thing, we're adjusting things, things change. And that's a huge part of health, is how do you adapt to change?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and they're talking about aging and people that have, you know, longer lives and are more productive in their later years. It's because they know how to adapt to change, losing a partner, which is really a hard thing, stress-wise.
Yeah.
they're able to deal with it better because they have they've developed over their whole lifetime a way of seeing change is not just, you know, one day door closing, another door open, you know, that half full thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think, and in art, everything's always changing until you put down your thing and say it's finished. And it's never really finished because you could look at it for a while and want to change it again.
Yeah, yeah, or start something new
and
or whatever.
I think that's true probably with music. I mean, you write a piece of music, but you keep going back and changing this and changing that.
Well, that had a thing for me of like in the process of music, which was, you know, looking back, I think I've done 7 albums or something. And every time I did an album, I had this moment where I had to go like, if I keep tweaking this, I will never.
Exactly.
It just got over that hill of like, I've got to let this baby go.
Yes.
It's not perfect. Like, I had 4 people proof my book. There's still freaking typos in
my book. Of course.
It's like, I don't care. I'm like, I'm moving on. Like, I got to do other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think part of the artistic, I think the, like you said, impediment, I think maybe the impediment, and you tell me with your experiences, one is that expectation of like, I can't move on until I do this, and I don't have time to spend that much time getting something perfect. So I'm just too busy, like you said, like all the excuses of like, I don't have time, because they think what it takes to create art is that level of attention to get it to that level, somehow some external validation. Yep. I don't know what that is. And also the idea that if they, probably 3 things. One is if they get into it, they may find out stuff that they don't want to know about themselves.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then the 3rd thing is that they're not good enough to do. I'm not a painter. So it's the self-identification thing. I had a client one time who was like, I don't want to do hypnotherapy because I don't want to know what is going to come. Like they knew something was there, but I didn't want to know. Like, yeah, I don't want to hear that.
I respect that. Going back to sort of what I was saying in terms of being a therapist with a client, you don't want to open up something that
all
the client isn't ready to deal with.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure they have, you know, real ego strengths or, you know, like support systems or whatever when you do start to go there or they start to go there. Because, yeah, it's one of the major pitfalls in therapy is that things can happen too fast without, you know, the proper safeguards in place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and I think all of that's true, what you're saying. And at one of the book events I did, that actually was a really good question that came from a man in the audience. He said, you know, this all sounds so joyful and playful. He said, what if one of the things that comes up or one of the things you want to process is anger or something dark? And it was a great question because it's true. It still would be an effective process, but I would definitely recommend having somebody there like a support person to help with that. If you're getting into really serious issues, you don't want to be just sitting in your living room, you know, cutting out images and gluing them. And Jeff has a really good suggestion. Like he always says, you should just advise people to just, you know, when I said just take 5 minutes, you know, just leaf through a magazine and find something that catches your eye and rip it out, or a word that, you know, somehow that seems like a word for the day type of thing.
And I think that, like, starting real quick though, I think that, see, because I've advised people, like, for the creative process, like, doodle on a piece of paper, right? But I think, but then sometimes people go, why doodle all the time? But there is that difference between an intentional act and I'm on the phone doodling while I'm on the phone act. And I think what you just described there is like, we all flip through magazines, but if you're flipping through a magazine, which takes the same amount of time that you were before flipping through a magazine, but you're doing it looking for the thing that catches your eye.
Or not really looking for, but letting it come to you. Because I think that's the other thing about what I'm talking about is it's like, it's an exchange between something in the environment and your response to that.
But it's still a state of mind that but you're looking through the magazine with a different state of mind.
With a different state of mind,
whether
absolutely.
You're letting it in or you're looking, but it's different than waiting for the dentist.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
And that's the qualitative difference.
And intention is huge.
That's the thing. But the point is it, the doodle with intention is a whole another animal than the doodle while you're on the phone, right? Because I've had clients where I go, you're going to do 2 minutes of walking. That's your exercise per day. And some of them have said, why walk all day? Yeah, but not for the reason of taking care of yourself.
And being conscious and watching your legs.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to take this time for I'm not going to get to my car. I'm just taking my time for myself, that thing.
Yeah.
And that's what art, I believe, is.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I'm glad that you said that because that was the whole beginning of my journey, was really stopping the busyness of my life and taking time to be with myself, just simply to be with myself, which that conscious walking would do, because we're so outer directed, most of us. And to just take some time and actually think, you know, am I breathing really fast? Am I, you know, is my heart rate going crazy? Am I tense? Am I holding my, you know, self really, my shoulders really tensely? I mean, I started doing yoga very late in life. And the beautiful thing about yoga is it does give you this body awareness. Right. And so even when I'm not doing it, because I don't do it regularly, I go class once a week, but I'm really aware of how I'm sitting, how I'm walking. And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
But it's taking the time to actually let the inner reality of your experience talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's going on all the time, but we, you know, we're so involved. We don't give it the space. And I think that's a huge component of health. It's also how we might hear that, well, if we stop just eating chip after chip after chip and think, oh, I'm doing this because I should really be going in the kitchen and making a salad or making a sandwich or something that would be better for me. I'm just doing this because, you know, I'm also very tense or
yeah,
I'm also very irritated.
Yeah.
I'm stressed. It's not just a hunger thing anymore.
Right.
And so, but you wouldn't have that awareness if you didn't spend just a moment with yourself thinking about why am I doing this?
Yeah, building in the practice
why
of
am
that
I doing
kind
this?
Of awareness. Yeah, yeah. And I think that with any, you know, partitioned, like we go, I want to eat better because I don't want to get diabetes, or I want to eat better because I want to hit the scale weight. I want to exercise because I want to lower my heart rate and get to, I want to practice art if we do to create the painting. But I think what you're getting at via bringing art into the mainstream, or at least into the same level of everything else, is it is ultimately about bringing joy, in which case then it can be a whole number of things on the same level. It's like, if you make walking about your heart rate, then 2 minutes is going to seem futile. If you make walking about making your life better and bringing more joy, then 2 minutes may be the perfect amount for you right now. And it's totally giving you the result.
Yep.
It's just that we get locked into the lower level results instead of the bigger level results. And then we shun 2 minutes as if it's a completely useless thing.
Yeah.
Like we would shun doodling on a piece of what that going to do a ton. But it's like, we want to know what's that going to do. What's my real result that I can quantify from doodling on a piece of paper, and we can't give them that. I don't know. There's no quantity. We can't put that in a museum. So therefore, you don't have a quantifiable result. But if you look at the quality of your life, oh, okay, wait a second.
Right.
You know, then there's results, and that's what's happening through that process.
And to me, it's all about awareness. I mean, you know, even if you don't even do art, but if you just stop and pay more attention to your inner world, I just think it's really wonderful to express that. And to share that, because I think that's what life is all about.
But then I think paint by numbers and coloring can possibly deliver that then also.
But it's not just you. I mean, you get to choose the color. I mean, I suppose that's the choice. But the thing is, when you create it from the beginning, all the decision making is yours.
For sure.
But
coloring can be, couldn't it be, and I'm not defending coloring. I don't really have an opinion about it, frankly. I do find that people are relaxed by it.
It's totally relaxing.
It is making a beautiful thing. You're using colors that look beautiful.
As I said it earlier, you are more in the moment, which is what I think you're talking about.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
It's
kind of technically useless, maybe like a 2 minute walk would be. But then again, you're stopping. You're doing something specifically to make yourself feel better.
And while you're doing that, your mind and your hand are occupied. And so the same kind of processes can happen. Maybe not quite the same, but along the similar lines as to what I'm talking about, because another part of your brain, that part, in other words, I guess it's the left brain is busy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the right brain can kind of get alive and activated again and communicate. And like the key is the reflective piece in what I'm talking about in the book too. It's like, okay, you have an experience, you let that come into you, then you express what's going on, whatever that is. And then you have a chance to have a conversation with what you created. And there's this reflective piece, which is really important. And that is often, in my case, with words. And so I think with the coloring, if you were coloring, and while you're coloring, you just thought, like little lines came in, maybe a poem came.
Uh-huh, interesting. Oh, so
then
I
you
see.
Write
yeah.
it down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excellent.
And then you
and
express
then all of a sudden
it.
Coloring
and that can
is like
happen.
A, totally.
And coloring is the doorway going through, just like I'm saying play.
And coloring can be a doorway to then starting with a blank page eventually.
Exactly.
Right. And so it's like whatever gets you. See, because I've started clients on journaling with one word.
Yeah.
Per day. And they go, oh, I don't know which word. I go, it doesn't matter what word. And write the word journal because it doesn't really matter. It's the practice of getting used to it.
Yes.
Then you can move on from there.
And the other thing, like I'm a great proponent of DEX as a stimulus, you know, like or an image as a stimulus. Like, you know, you can find any kind of image. But some of them have a little more symbolic, like you know, like a mother looking affectionately at a newborn or something, you know, you can have an image like that and just say, you know, write a few words about this. And in your case, you know, throw out a word to them that, you know, like you said, journal is fine, but, you know, or exercise or anything.
Yeah.
But these decks have, you know, images usually and words. And so they'll start someone doing something right away, which is good because I think that pause is what's really important. Just like you said, the 2-minute walk. I think the pause is a huge part of the process. Setting intention also, like not specific intention, like I want to make this, but the intention that I want something to, you know, to open up in me through this. I want to be more loving through this or whatever. You can set, you know, it kind of can be a little bit broad rather than I'm going to look for an image of two lovers kissing. I just want to bring more love into my life or something. There's different ways you can do it. I'm getting too specific here. But to me, the key is coming back to the present moment and being more aware of what's going on in you and around you. And then it makes you more aware in your interactions with other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think ultimately that's health because then you're not, you know, you're not bringing in all sorts of extraneous projections and other stuff
from your past
that create problems
all
the time. And then you're living
your
life with problems.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's
freeing. You liberate all that.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah. And I actually think that, like, at least, and this, I don't know if it's chicken or the egg, I don't know. But when I was playing music and acting, and I find acting like great, it was a great job, but not creative the way the music was for me. Not by a freaking stretch, you know, not by a long shot. But being creative in any capacity then allows you to be a creative person in every capacity.
Exactly.
And so what is your experience with that with regard to your clients when you were maybe practicing more as a more typical therapist kind of thing? You know, bringing creativity to the workplace in a completely non-creative job. There's actually ways to apply creativity that are lost. And I think that allows jobs to be more fulfilling that seem sort of boring to maybe to the practitioner. But if they bring creativity, then they're like, oh, maybe I could. It's just sort of like a mindset.
Yeah, it is totally a mindset. And it does. It does go out. It percolates into everything. It becomes more... just you're more aware when you're getting dressed in the morning, you know, like what you're going to wear. You're sort of an art piece yourself. Uh-huh. And when you come to work, you're going to maybe do different things or want to add flowers to the table if you're working in a restaurant you know, there's different things. And I do think everybody expresses creativity in a lot of ways that they don't even acknowledge.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know,
like what?
Like buying flowers, choosing flowers and the palette of the flowers, the colors.
Sort of do it instinctually, but...
Yes. And then they create this beautiful bouquet, or people do cooking and they arrange it on a plate a certain way. I mean, they're using, most people are using creativity all the time. They just don't wear that. They don't say I'm creative,
but I think
but
it's
they're
useful
expressing
to,
it and gardening.
And I think it's useful maybe for them, maybe without even changing habits, to at least acknowledge
exactly
where they are already creative.
Absolutely. Right? And I always do that. And that's one of the first questions I ask, you know, like, you know, do you do anything that you would call creative in your life? And they say, oh, no, well, you know, I used to do this when I was in high school or whatever. And then I'll say, well, do you do gardening? Do you? I want to expand the concept that we can own it more.
Yes, yes. And they
number
go, oh,
one.
Wait, I kind of am creative.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that funny?
And yes, and it does go. The other thing I just wanted to add, what you said a little while ago when you were acting and when you were doing music, is when you're doing something creative, it allows you into this community of other creative people. And when you're around creative people, it's an incredible energy that regenerates and everybody gets more jazz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's why classes are probably effective or retreats are effective because you're in this mix.
Yeah.
It's not just you trying to, you know, bring it up from down below. It's like it's all around you. You're almost overstimulated by the creativity.
Yeah.
And I think to me that's, you know, indigenous cultures very often, like their art is just part of their life.
Yeah,
it goes with function.
Games so, too.
Yes.
It's really like
yes.
It's totally. And then one of the books I drew from for my book was that this was a total mind blower for me. But because it's called Approaching the Natural, so the idea was like you know, to get to that sort of end or whatever. But the idea was in artificial playgrounds, like the ones we see at schools with the play, the asphalt and the whole thing, usually might makes right in that setting. The stronger physical kids would be sort of the leaders of the mm-hmm. pack in that context. Right. But in nature, the more creative kids, the kids that could make something up from nothing, became sort of the leaders of the kids group. Like they would be the one, the most creative ones would call the shots and say, let's do this kind of game. And they would sort of be in charge of that. Totally amazing.
Yeah.
But in the sort of man-made kind of concrete right angles kind of thing, it was like, I'm the strongest. I can climb the gym, the jungle gym. So therefore I'm the leader of the pack.
Yeah.
But the mind takes over in nature, which leads me to the conclusion, which is that that's a more natural state for us to yeah. be creative.
And animals play.
Yeah.
If you see them, like we have horses, we have donkeys, we have, you know, you see animals playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously otters are considered the most playful of all, but I mean, all animals, I think it is. It's something, it's part of the community.
And then we put them, but then in the modern, you know, construct of our world today, it's sort of like, you don't need to be that creative. And so like, we don't have that need anymore because we just
something else has done it for you.
Yeah. Because we have to show up to work and stamp envelopes or whatever our job is, you know? And so it's hard to sort of like, well, do I need to be? And so two things. One is, do you find, this is going to be totally sexist, so sorry, but in general, is there a difference between the male perspective in this is just your experience, so you don't have to make a full generalization, but do men have a harder time with the artistic, artistic process than women? Let's say you've got a man and a woman who don't do technically anything creative. They come to your imagination play shop and they go, okay, and you sit down and you take for a second and describe, like, we're sitting in Jones' studio and I'm going to do a YouTube video so people can see kind of visually what we're talking about here. But we're surrounded by, like, you walk, to me, it looks like a play yard. It's like a kid's, it's like an adult play yard. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just stuff everywhere. Like, it looks fun. Like, you just want to get into it. You're always like, it's cluttered, but I love that. Like, artistically, that's where clutter should exist, in mm-hmm. my opinion. Like, mm-hmm. everything else in life should be organized. So you can sort of
it's
have time.
Organized
to,
clutter.
Exactly. But, like, I want, like, I always the musician where, like, I wanted my studio organized mm-hmm. and I wanted my guitar out and everything because everything else was an impediment. I didn't want to look for a cable or look for a pick because it would just irritate the crap out of me. I wanted to walk in and have that done so I could let the juices start flowing, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I wanted the creative things to be accessible and ready. I wanted the microphone. One switch turns my guitar and one switch PA and we're rolling. But everything else, you know, I don't care, you know, like everything else. So this is like, it's a lot of stuff, but that's appropriate, right? And there's paper on the table right here. Like, it's just invite, like, you got to draw. Like, it's just telling you got to
doodle.
Draw. Yeah, yeah. It's like, doodle.
you can't sit still.
you can't not. Like, your paper on the table. It's such a great thing, you know, because as kids, it's like, we go to a restaurant, we draw while we're waiting. Like, that's kind of thing. Yeah. So anyway, so just to describe, like, there's just stuff. I mean, there's like magazines and there's, I love that you always use like pizza rounds, like the cardboard pizza rounds. There's obviously paints, but there's crayons and there's, there's glue there. I mean, I'm looking at
oil pastels.
Oil pastels. Like, yep, literally, everything, yep. Scissors.
Lots of stuff too. Like you said, stuff, like random objects that you could, you know, do an assemblage with, you know, something. Yeah. Just stuff like, you know, parts from computers. I mean, stuff.
Yeah, that's what I like. You could build like a statue in here.
Exactly.
Like you could build a little like modern art piece in here, you know.
So to get back to the male-female thing?
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to get back
to.
But the point is I walk in here, and I'm creative, and I've done those kinds
of
things.
And you're a man.
And I'm a
yes for your audience.
Yes, because you can't see, but I am. Coming in here, it definitely sparks creativity. And I think, you know, it's not like what somebody might think, like, well, here's my pens and they're all organized and here's my blank canvas. This looks more like I just want to get into stuff. Like, I just want to get into stuff here.
That's your experience.
Yeah.
You're speaking
as
for
I walk in here, this is what it looks like to me. Like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, I would totally. But for some people, it might be maybe overwhelming, or if they're not used to creating, where do I start? I would just start ripping stuff up in here. I would have no problem doing that. But so back to the male female thing. Is there a generalization you can make about that? Does society treat creativity for men? I'll just be frank. Are there guys who come in here sort of like, there's like a machismo and sort of being creative is like, it's for not for me. I'm a football watcher guy. I mean, those two things aren't mutually exclusive to me.
No. Well, in my experience here, and that's all I'm going to speak to right now, is there's no difference. In fact, the men have been sort of like you. Like, it's almost like they've given permission to a side of themselves that they've repressed or it's been repressed by.
Do more women sign up?
But definitely more women. And of course, that's what I was just going to say, that it's very self-selective. So more women sign up. But when I do have a couple, it's very often the man that's much more into it.
Seriously.
Surprising to me.
Yeah.
Because most of the groups I go to, mostly women, we're always delighted if there's a man. At my readings, I'm always happy if there's a man.
But that leads me to mean the implication there's it's not as many.
Well, and because it's considered a feeling thing.
And men,
not to be sexist again, but typically men are supposed to be more stoic with their feelings. And so to ask them to express their feelings, well, I don't have any feelings. You know, it's kind of like that can come up, or the fear that I do have a feeling and maybe I'll cry and boys don't cry. You know, like there's subtle messages.
Yep. But isn't how great that art, what a great medium, because you don't have to talk about your feelings per se.
Right. And I may have said this on the first podcast, because I do go back to this a few times when I'm talking about guys and process. At the high school, you know, I worked with kids that were, you know, considered troublemakers or different. They'd be sent to the counseling office and I'd do the art with them. And also we had a class, an elective class called Alternative Mirrors, and we used a lot of art-based stuff in there. And what was really interesting was some of the hardest, their exterior is kind of like really tough and stony-faced and not very accessible. And they would do one of the things, this is what I think I might have told you about before. We would do these boxes, these self boxes. And so on the outside, you can kind of collage or put stuff on, glitter, whatever you want. And that's kind of like how the world sees you. And on the inside, you can put little things that represent who you are on the inside or how you're feeling or whatever. I can't remember exactly how I phrased it. We do different things. But in this one case, it was a self box. And, you know, I recycle a lot of stuff from the inn, and we used to get these kind of clear plastic boxes that had a lid and a bottom. And this, several of the kids chose those to work with. Some chose cardboard. Anyway, one kid in particular, and sure enough, on the outside of his box, you know, lots of like camouflage kind of coloring and guys, soldier guys, and big football guys, and lots of macho male imagery on the outside. On the inside, it was like cotton batten.
No way.
It was, I have these little figurines that come in red rose tea boxes. And at that time, there were a lot of, I think they have different themes. And at that time, it was animals or something. And he had like a little lamb, was kind of sitting down.
What a level of awareness, though. To acknowledge that and then
exactly
I mean,
he
massive,
knew yes
that's what I'm saying that's
and the thing about these boxes that the particular box that like a lot of the cardboard boxes all right they have all those different sides and a lid that flops open this one actually had a top and a bottom like the plastic lid fit on the bottom so you took the top off to get inside and so when we were talking about it I kind of wondered, is he going to open up his box? Because I could see what was inside it. Yeah. And, you know, he put, sparkly papers and different, really quite interesting inside. And, you know, they had some time to work on it. Anyway, he did open it up, which really, that's the part, the awareness. That he was willing to say, you know, I'm really a tough guy, but I also have all this softness and vulnerability inside.
Gosh,
you know, I don't remember the words he used, but he had the awareness. And we always have them right before they verbally share, and it's always optional if they verbally share. But he did. He took the top off the box to let us all see inside him, essentially.
Well, how old of a kid?
High school. Yeah, so like
massive.
15,
I mean,
16.
Kind of awesome.
Yeah.
God,
that kind of shows you that, I mean, there's a lot of inhibitions put on kids, boys, we're talking about boys right now, to not feel their emotions.
Already.
And even if they feel them, definitely don't share them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but it's an immediate thing. When you start doing the art, you start to feel.
Yeah. And so the men that come in, you're, like you said, it's probably self-selective.
It's definitely self-selective.
Yeah. And so do you ever get where, so I know because I teach nutrition here, so like couples will sign up and clearly one of them
is the leader. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And the other one is just being dragged against their will. Those are always my favorite because I'm like, you and I are going to have
Me
some
too.
Fun.
Yeah, And, that is often, and in one case, I remember.
If I can't have them laughing within 9 minutes, like, I failed. Like, I got to get into it somehow, you know, because it's such a challenge.
I'm just remembering one couple, and actually, it's one of the few times I had two adults and two kids, and they had two boys, and the boys were quite young. And so I was kind of wondering, oh, should I do this? Because, you know, it's a different experience working with kids and working with adults. I didn't want to limit the adults, and I didn't want to limit the kids.
Right.
Anyway, I did it. And what was really interesting, again, the man got really into it, and in the end, and the boys were getting restless at the end. They were starting to make cardboard swords and running around. They did participate. It was really nice. And the mother got really quite a bit out of it. But at the end, the guy was still working.
No joke.
And so I said, you know, if you want to stay here, we can go longer.
Yeah.
And so the mother took the two boys away, and the man stayed
here.
Oh
my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, you never know, and I'm sure he was dragged.
Yeah, I'm quite sure he was dragged. Yeah, yeah,
and he came around. You know, well, we're all going to do this.
And sometimes we need to be dragged, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Thank goodness we have people to drag us.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I would probably never be vegan if I hadn't been with Jeff, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I got dragged in that direction.
But so, in sort of wrapping things up, I want to get into the nitty-gritty. I want to get into, because I think, again, so I'll put it this way. With my clients and stuff, a lot of times the impediment, I keep coming back to this word, because to me with art, it's like all about what's impeding.
And just to be esoteric here, impediment, if you look at the roots, ped is foot. So it's a small step word, kind of.
And mint is mint. So it's like eating a mint while on your feet. I think that's right. I didn't study. It's been a year since I've done Latin.
It's the step we don't take, the impediment.
Is that really what it is?
No, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's kind of cool. So, again, I think impediment comes into big time with virtually everything that we do. Because to me, it's because we have perceptions of what is exercise. I mean, I've had clients who say, I don't have time for exercise. And then they go on to say, you know, I have to join a gym. And these are all, in their minds, like, that's what exercise is.
Exactly.
And so I go like, okay, but also walking around for a minute is exercise, technically, right?
Washing windows.
Yeah, and so if you, again, like, the intention of being creative while gardening is as valid as any other freaking art, you know, because you know what I mean? So how do you break that down? But I think the idea, at least in society today, is, okay, we've got these perceptions of, like, this is art, therefore I don't do it because art would be this, and this, and I'd have to do it this well, and I'd have to take a class to the point that I could then paint, et cetera,
absolutely,
et cetera. Impediment, boom.
Boom.
The second is that we have perceptions of what artists are, you know? And therefore I'm not an artist, or I know artists and they're annoying because I knew two and they were, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, and then the other thing is with art therapy, the word therapy, which I think is brilliant that you don't use that when you're doing your work, is because that's loaded like nobody's business. Like, okay, so this is why I'm doing this, to, you know, find out why at 6 years old, I blah, blah, who knows. Right. So, how, and like you mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, of you know, used in prisons, used in all these kinds of areas for, you know, people who are mentally, you know, insane maybe or whatever, but as a way to do these things, open up feelings, deal with it. Okay, now cut to the use of art, and I almost want to say use, but in for regular people, I know that's a loaded question, but for people who are just like going to work,
not identified,
maybe they do, but every day they're not like issue laden. They're not, they wouldn't think, I've got to go to therapy because I got heavy crap going on right now. They're not those kinds of people. They're just raising families and everything. And I'm trying to sell, and you're more than I am trying to sell art as important as anything else that you're trying to do to make yourself happy. But what do you do as that person? Because you don't necessarily want to get into something heavy. You don't want to, you know, but you've, as a person, what you do, and an author, breaking this down into, like, here's how you include this thing, just like healthy eating, just like exercise, just like a few deep breaths or 5 minute meditation. Like, what is that for you, for somebody at home, practical, like for real? And a man or a woman, like a dad who doesn't do anything creative, sort of like a construction worker and just got the thing and I just dialed this in. Doing art can be like the weirdest thing in the world for somebody, for a lot of people, men and women. Could you be like, art, whatever, because it's loaded, right? So what is that, like, what are your endpoints? What are your inroads of, like, to break down those perceptions? Like,
Well, I think I just want someone to start doing something. Like I said before, just start having that awareness that the world all around you is full of incredible things, and your brain, your multi-firing brain, is getting images all the time. And some are sticking in there, and some are, you know, moving around, and some are creating actions on your part. And that's life. We're all doing that. So why not use imagery to become a little more aware of what's going on? And so as a starting point, I usually just do the collage thing, you know, like I said earlier. What I do a lot now are these little journals. They're just small little journals. I just do random, like maybe even just three pieces of something to collage.
A mini collage on one of the pages.
A mini collage, yeah, just a mini collage. And then I just kind of...
It's like tape?
Pardon me? I use glue.
But somebody could use tape.
Absolutely.
But like you don't need to buy anything.
No, you don't need to buy. That's the other big thing.
And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like
you're trying to get there. Yeah.
I don't want somebody to go like, okay, now I got to go buy this.
No, you don't need to buy anything. In fact, I think that's another impediment, to come back to that word, is that, like, you know, journals can be beautiful. Well, if you have a beautiful journal, I think she talks about this in The Artist's Way, it's like then, again, you think you have to put something meaningful in there. You don't want to be scribbling in there and you know, scratching out in there. If it's just a regular, you know, notebook from school, whatever.
I use a spiral bound.
Exactly.
Like a crappy mead
spiral
bound on purpose.
Exactly.
Just like,
oh. And then you can just write and fill one page. Yeah. And, you know, you want to be careful that the pages aren't huge.
Yeah.
You have to write three. But you know, yes, you don't. I think that's a real drawback to think, well, I need to have a good set of oil pastels. I have to have a good set of oil paints or watercolors or whatever. The very first thing I did that started me actually on this whole process, which is in the book, is done on newsprint. Like my kids had a pad of newsprint with those little watercolors that, you know, the six little hole things that kids have with a funny little brush that doesn't have the right kind of bristles or anything. And that was the very first thing I did that was meaningful to me. You don't want to get fancy stuff. You just, you know, you can do it on an airplane. You know, you're looking through a magazine and like you said, you can use tape or I just always have a little glue stick. Mm. But, you know, and just do something and then let that talk back to you. Let, you know, just look at it. And I mean, even if it's just like a hand and you wonder, this actually happened very recently. I had an incident with a very serious injury of a hand.
I remember.
It swole up. I had to go to the hospital. It was a cat bite. Anyway, and shortly thereafter, but the hand was better, I was in an art group that actually is going to meet today. And we did this whole collage thing. And at the end of it, I didn't even realize it as I was doing it, but at the end of it, when I put it down into the center, I put it down and I realized I put it down with the hand that had been injured. And I thought, oh my God, this is all about the hand, my injury of my hand. And it's true that all the stuff on this collage. Anyway, my point is that it can be just a hand. And then you can say, well, what are you here for? Why are you showing up in my journal today? What am I supposed to know? Or you can, you know, use it for a more purposeful thing. But the point is, yes, you can start with nothing. You just have to have the desire. I think it's an inner desire. I actually talk about this in the book too. Like when someone is, you know, in fairy tales and they're granted wishes, it's always like name three wishes.
Yeah.
And the power of that process is that you have to go inside to think, what do I really want? What do I really want?
Yeah.
So once the desire's there, the desire to have more insight, and why not try this other tool? I've done meditation, I've done this, I've done that. Why not try this?
And it's not the desire to be an artist.
No, it's not the desire.
It's not the desire to create beautiful art.
It's just to get more aware of your life as you're living moment to moment. And to me, it's a natural. It's a natural.
It's a natural. Yeah, exactly.
Back to the natural.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes it as essential as anything else.
And if
your desire is to bring more awareness and happiness into your life, it is as essential as anything else.
I agree. And to go back to the indigenous cultures, I think it was so integrated that their art was part, you know, they decorated their, I'm thinking of natives right now, they decorated their teepees, they made beautiful baskets. It was all part of, like, whatever they used had to have some artful element to it. And they also believed that everything was sacred and that everything had a spirit and that they could communicate through ritual and ceremony. And all of these things are very powerful concepts that I think, you know, we're not going to go there necessarily, but I think we forget the power of having rituals that make us more connected to the great unknown, you know, the whole mystery of living. So yeah, it's part of health in my estimation.
Yeah, I do. And I think as a culture, if we were more creative, I mean, what an amazing world it would be if at least an idea of creativity was brought to everything, even to like, if you're going to build a building anyway,
yeah,
right? But can we make it beautiful, or yeah, can we at least try?
And I think it is happening. You know, I think it is happening in different ways. And I remember when Apple's first came out and they had this great campaign, Think Different.
Yeah.
It was on the back of all the magazines. Oh, yeah. And I loved that.
Me
and
too.
I cut most of them out and posted them up all over the house because I wanted my kids, you know, to have that idea that that's creative, just to think different.
Yeah,
just
don't
swallow everything whole.
Yeah, yeah. And they always had the picture of the, you know, Miles Davis and like all these
had all these different people that had done groundbreaking things because they were thinking, you know, outside the box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, so yes, creativity is to me owning the fact that you have an individual perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Only you, you know, are you.
Yeah.
And everything in you is particular to you, even though you're part of this incredible whole. And the more that that comes into aliveness and it gets expressed, the richer the whole world is, because we're all showing up
as
creative beings.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, thinking out of the box isn't even relevant, because if you're thinking, it's going to be just you.
Exactly.
You
know, it's your box.
You don't have to think of any box. You don't think, I'm going to think different than that. It's not even think. It's just think.
Right.
Not even think different, but just if you get more into yourself, your individuality is going to come out, because it's there.
Yep.
But we lose it because
we lose it. And we, you know, we strive for so long to lose it, you know, to fit in and to become. And then at a certain point it tips and it's like, well, who am I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, that's what the story of my book is kind of about, is where I suddenly felt like I'm going through my life, but I'm kind of sleepwalking.
Yeah, yeah.
Something was really missing.
And you're functional and you're paying taxes.
And I was not identified as a crazy. I mean, there was no reason I needed therapy. I wasn't necessarily seeking therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say, I guess I was, because I was, you know, I felt like I wanted to be happier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but happiness is a byproduct, right?
Sure, but that's the kind of personality I was asking you about, which is like, you weren't going like, I was abused and therefore I need to, like, this is serious. And that happens, obviously.
No.
But this wasn't that. You were just like, what am I doing? Like,
yeah, I had this incredible
life. On the outside,
life.
It was like, oh yeah, you own an inn, you're this, all good, it's all dialed in. It's great, great. But there was something missing.
And I felt so guilty that I wasn't enjoying it and savoring it fully. But I was like resentful and unhappy and rushing all the time and all these things. And I thought, this isn't what life's all about.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was an awareness that something was wrong, which maybe has to be the starting point.
Yeah, maybe.
But then, you know, discovering that was an incredible gift to me.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to share.
No, I think it's fantastic. So anyway, well, I really enjoyed hanging out with you.
Thank
you. This was fun, huh?
Yeah.
We didn't even have to talk about your, you know, they can go back and listen to the old one. But the book is called The Art of Play, Ignite Your Imagination to Unlock Insight, to Unlock Insight, Healing, and Joy. So Joan Stanford, and it is published on She Writes Press.
Yes.
And it's everywhere, stores and Amazon and all that kind of
stuff. I don't know that it is everywhere. It can be ordered from, the bookstore can order it from Ingram Publishing Services.
Okay, that's a distributor.
Yep.
And
yep.
then what's next? You have a reading coming up like in a week. So people, I don't know when they're going to listen to this, but November 2nd
November 2nd and 3rd, I'm going to be at the East West Bookstore in Mountain View. The first evening is going to be like a talk, and then the second evening is going to be a play shop.
Cool, and then you just found out about something in
Belmont. And then hopefully that's going to be confirmed for December 3rd at the College of Notre Dame de Namur in Belmont.
Okay.
I'll be doing a workshop there.
Awesome, and where do people find you?
And that's December 3rd,
and this,
hopefully.
By the way, when you were here last time, I don't think you had any social
I
media
didn't.
Stuff, and now you're like
and
a
I'm
social
still,
media
I'm still
pro.
A novice. No, I'm not. But anyway, it's my website is www.joanstanford.com. I'm on Facebook.
Is it joanstanford.art or something? Anyway,
just Google Joan Stanford.
Okay, yeah, Joan Stanford art, though.
And then I have another an author's page as well.
Yeah, 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 cool. Yep. And then Twitter, Joan Stanford art or whatever. Okay,
but
cool.
I'm kind of very
back. Best to do is go to joanstanford.com because your social media is found there anyway.
Yes, yes.
But anyway, the book is Art of Play, and it's a fantastic book. And it's great. And I love the work that you're doing. And I love your story. Like, I do urge people to go back and listen, because it is such a... you know, like, you grow up this way and you do this thing and you do the thing, that's your expectations of you, and this is your self expectations, and then all of a sudden it's like you're branching out and you're really like, you know, you're, you know, not 20. You know, and so now, but like, look at
we
what
know
you've
done. I'm older than 65 because that was several
that was
years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And so but like, there's no time where this can't happen for anybody.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what I love. It's like, my life now at 47 is it's just 180 degree difference than it was at 27.
Yeah, you could never could have forecast it.
Right,
absolutely. That's the thing. And that's like the happy accidents. I mean, I think life is meant to be lived, and to get in a rut and to know you're in a rut and not want to change that is what always boggles my mind.
Yeah.
It's like,
and maybe they want to, but people think they can't. And that's what I come up with clients. It's like they want to change. There's no doubt. But because of all the things we've talked about, it's like, it's hard to make that first step.
Yeah.
And, but I think that, you know, the end sort of in conclusion kind of sentence about this whole conversation is I just hope the direction that you're seeing, cause you said you're seeing it continues, which is that let's make art, you know, just as essential as everything else. And it's not a subculture. It's a human thing. It is, creativity is a human thing, just like movement and just like what we need nutritionally. We need to exercise that creative part of us. And I think that gets lost. And I think it's a huge loss when it gets lost. You know, I think
for the whole society,
for everybody,
absolutely.
All the amazing
not
stuff,
just
that
individually,
could be put,
yeah,
totally, that could be put into all the contributions that for everybody to,
yep,
to, instead people are just like, you know, making negative comments on YouTube. It's like, make your own damn video. You know, don't waste your time commenting on anything. To work,
right,
do something, create something, because it's amazing, right?
Yes.
And we just want people to see that. So
thank
anyway.
You.
Well,
yeah,
cool.
I agree. Well said.
Okay. Well, it was lovely to have you here.
Thank
and
you.
And I'll see you later because I work here.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, that was author Joan Stanford, registered art therapist. Did you enjoy that episode? Hopefully you did. And if you did, please comment on that and share it around. I hope that it inspires you to try something in the creative pursuits. Like we've said, you know, we said a million times in that episode, it's sort of a back burner issue for most people. It's a back burner thing. It's a thing that we are quick to dispense of in lieu of more exercise or more, you know, attention to healthy eating. But it's the deal. Okay. All right, you guys. So I hope that you enjoyed it. I'm glad that if you did, I'll put it that way. And I will be back next week with episode 164. 106 just keeps climbing. 200. I feel like I just did the 100th episode. 200 is looming. But, you know, more on that, I guess, when that day approaches. You guys are awesome. Please keep the emails coming, podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. If you'd like to send me an email, podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves, treat yourselves well, and I appreciate all of you, all of your support. Just coming here listening, man, is awesome, and thank you, and I will be back next week. All right, you guys? In the meantime, be well.
Better than you, what it takes to be a man. I know much better than you, what it takes to be a man. As I'm standing here on the outskirts, I'm standing here on the outskirts. Better than you, I try to claim every town. I know much better than you, I try claiming every town. As I'm watching you here from the outskirts, as I'm watching you here from the outskirts. Return. and I'm tired of being observing and roaming. I can't keep on running and running and I'm tired of pressing down, pressing down, pressing down. Wanting what you think you want when was a much younger man. I wanted what you think you want when I was a much younger man. I long since moved to here on the edge. Long since moved to here on the outskirts, to where I will return, to where I will return.